Good morning. The Secondary Education and Career Development Subcommittee will now come to order. Missy, would you call the roll, please?
Chair McLean.
Here.
Vice Chair Schoaf.
Here.
Ranking Member Bush.
Here.
Representative Andrade. Representative Benjamin. Representative Barrero.
Here.
Representative Fisher.
Here.
Representative Gio Lombardo.
Here.
Representative Harding.
Here.
Representative Maggard is excused. Representative Maney.
Here.
Representative Onfroy. Representative Rizzo.
Here.
Representative Robinson.
Here.
Representative Tuck.
Here.
Representative Valdez.
Present.
Representative Woodson.
Yeah.
Representative Yarborough.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you, Missy. Members, I'm going to have to go present a bill over in the House, and so I got to get some stepping going on over that way. I'm going to turn the meeting over to my capable Vice Chair Schoaf, and I'll be back as soon as I can get back. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, please remember to silence all electronic devices. Be recognized by the chair before addressing the committee or the presenters, and remember to push the microphone button after you have been recognized so that everyone here and watching online or on TV can hear you. I want to say good morning to everybody, welcome you to our third committee meeting. I hope everyone enjoyed the past week's presentations on ways that our state can prioritize and incentivize the attainment of credentials that are valued in the labor market. Today, we will turn our attention to getting a better understanding of how the education system prepares students for college and a career. Research has shown that the effective student advising, which includes early identification of a student's educational or career path and continued strategic institutional support, can decrease time to degree or credential completion, lower educational costs, and better prepare the students for transfer or entry into the workforce. Before we hear from our panelists on the work taking place in our schools and institutions, we have invited Ms. Tina Young, a senior legislative analyst with APAGA, to provide us with an overview of Florida's school choice landscape, including school option, school choice that leads to college credit and career readiness. APAGA's full report was included in our meeting materials. The report provides state and school districts profiles that include information on student participation and demographics for each available school choice option. Ms. Young, thank you for being here today. You are recognized to present.
Thank you so much, Mr. Vice Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tina Young, and I'm an analyst with APAGA, and today we've been asked to present our research on the school choice landscape in Florida. To give you some background on the scope of our research, as you mentioned, we were asked to review 21 school choice programs and provide descriptions of each, as well as data on student participation in each program and demographics where available. For our presentation today, we'll provide you with some of the information from our research, including choice programs offered at public schools, and we'll try to highlight those programs that help prepare students for college and careers. Most of the data that we'll be talking about today is from the 2019-20 school year. First, I'll provide some background on education settings in Florida and provide an overview of choice in the state. Florida students can access education within three major settings. You have public school settings, which include traditional public schools as well as charter schools. And then you also have non-public education settings, which include private schools and home education programs. As you can see from this graphic, last school year, most students were enrolled in a public school setting. We also provided additional information about each of these settings to give you a sense of what each one looks like. And I'll walk you through some of the information we've included for public schools. Last school year, we had just over 3,600 schools that served almost 2.8 million students. In terms of race and ethnicity, just over a third of students identified as white, and about another third identified as Hispanic or Latino. Almost a quarter of students identified as African American, and other groups made up less than 8% of the student population. We've also included some other demographics for the categories that you see here. And I'd like to highlight this data point for free or reduced meals eligibility. To give you some context, this typically serves as a proxy to indicate how many students are economically disadvantaged. There have been some changes at the federal level to this program, which have made it a less accurate proxy. However, it's still a good reference point to get a sense of how many students may be economically disadvantaged within a particular program or within a district. So we provided this measure throughout the report when we had it available. We have also provided similar information for private school and home education settings when we had that information available as well. Students and families have a wide array of education options within each of these settings that we just talked about. We've categorized these options based on the settings where each is provided. In this first column, you could see that most of the options we reviewed are offered at public school settings. In that second column, there are four education options that are delivered to students in non-public settings. So again, that's home education or private schools. And finally, you have a few more options that students can access at either a public or non-public setting. One of the first options on that last slide that families typically take advantage of is the Voluntary Pre-Kindergarten Education Program, or VPK. And this is a program that helps prepare four-year-old children for kindergarten. While 72% of four-year-olds participated in VPK statewide last year, that participation rate varied by county. In the map you see here on the right, we see the percentage of four-year-olds in each county that participated in VPK. So this is not a head count. It's looking at, of the four-year-olds in that county, how many were enrolled in the program. You can see that there are some areas in lighter green where generally under half of the four-year-olds in the county were enrolled in VPK. And then there are areas with darker green, which shows higher participation rates. So there is some variation throughout the state. Once a child enters into the K-12 system, there are several education options available to them. Our analysis found that 46% of students took advantage of at least one of the 20 choice options we reviewed for K-12 students. There are a few things to keep in mind when taking in all of the information in this bar chart. This shows the percentages of program participation of all students. So that's public school students, private school students, and those in home education. In other words, our denominator here is the entire universe of students in Florida. Another thing to keep in mind is that kids can participate in more than one choice program at the same time. For this reason, adding counts or percentages of two or more programs is not advised because you'd be duplicating students that way. And you also shouldn't expect to add these percentages or counts throughout the report and get to 100%. Having said all of that, this bar chart is intended to give you an idea of participation in choice programs in the state as a whole. We did some further analysis that showed that 69% of the students in our group participated in a choice option that was delivered at a public school setting, which you could see here with the dark blue bars that appear on the chart now. And I'll spend the rest of the presentation providing some more information on these choice options. To give you a roadmap of the type of programs we'll be discussing, I've provided the categories we use to group the public school option, and they include alternate public school settings, specialized instruction programs, and high school acceleration programs. So I'll start with that first category I just mentioned. Some choice options allow public school students to attend schools other than their assigned schools. And the first example of this that we have here is charter schools, which are public schools that operate under a performance contract or a charter. We also have full-time virtual instruction, which allows students to learn online at home. And I want to point out here that we're talking about students who are choosing to receive their education virtually full time, and they're enrolled in a separate program for that purpose. So we're not talking about students who are temporarily learning remotely right now due to COVID. Those students are still technically enrolled in their assigned schools. They're just learning digitally at this time. Next, we have lab schools, which are affiliated with the state university and allows that university to conduct research at those schools. There are currently 6 lab schools throughout Florida. And finally, we have opportunity scholarships, which is a choice program that allows students in a low performing public school to transfer to another public school that is higher performing. When we look at student participation in these programs over time, you could see here from the chart that charter schools are by far the most chosen option, and the enrollment in them continues to grow. The rest of these options you'll see with those bottom 3 trend lines, and participation did not exceed 13,000 over the past 5 years for each of those programs. Here I'll provide a snapshot of the information we found for full-time virtual programs. Full-time virtual instruction is offered at both the state and district level. Students can enroll in the Florida Virtual School, which is available statewide, as well as a few district virtual options or virtual charter schools. Because we're talking about virtual programs and not brick and mortar schools, we had to do a couple of things differently to analyze student participation by district. Students who were enrolled in the Florida Virtual School were counted based on the county in which they reside, because there's no physical location for the Florida Virtual School. Students who participated in district virtual programs were counted based on the district offering the program. So for example, if a student was enrolled in a Seminole County district virtual program, they were counted as a Seminole student. Our analysis showed that there was some variation in how many students enrolled in full-time virtual programs. However, when you look at that as a percentage of students in any given county, enrollment in virtual instruction was 2% or less than the public school population. So even in those darker counties, students enrolled there still represent a small share of the population in that county. There was one exception to this, however, and that was in Hendry County, which had 20% of students participating in virtual instruction. So they were a major outlier. And when we looked into this further, we discovered that they offer a district virtual program to students statewide. Typically, when students enroll in a virtual program from a district, they do so in the county in which they live. But we did see some students in the data who enrolled in district virtual programs outside of their county of residence. 95% of students in that situation were taking the district program offered by Hendry County. So this was a little bit of an anomaly that we saw in the data. There is one other choice program in this category that I'll talk about separately, and that's controlled open enrollment. And this allows students to attend a district school of their choosing outside of their attendance zone, as long as it has capacity. We did not include data for this choice program in our report due to reliability concerns, which I'll kind of walk you through right now. Here are some percentages of students participating in controlled open enrollment in select districts. There are a few issues that stood out to us. First, we noticed that there were some districts that reported very high percentages of students as taking advantage of this option. So in that first highlighted example, you could see that 91% of students were reported as using this option. This would suggest that 91% of the students in that district were attending a school outside of their attendance zone. Another issue that kind of gave us pause was seeing the large changes in these percentages in the time frame that we looked at. You could see in these highlighted examples that percentages of controlled open enrollment students dropped dramatically from one year to the next. And we later pulled in the percentage of schools identified as schools of choice under the controlled open enrollment statute, which you could see in that last column with the green header. There does not appear to be much consistency in these percentages and what we were seeing with the data showing students in the program. In this example I've highlighted here, you could see similar percentages for students identified as schools of choice, but very different percentages of students reported as using controlled open enrollment. This suggests that districts may have different interpretations on how to record controlled open enrollment. So for example, it appears that one district may be recording students who are actually using controlled open enrollment, and perhaps that second district may be recording students who are attending schools identified as schools of choice, regardless if they're using controlled open enrollment to do so. All this to say, there were enough questions raised by the data that we didn't have enough of confidence to include it in our report, either in the program profile or in the district profiles. Next, I'll talk about options that offer specialized instruction programs for students. The first in this category is gifted, which allows eligible students to receive specially designed instruction to meet their needs beyond the general curriculum. The second option here is magnet schools, which offer a specialized curriculum such as STEM education or performing arts. The Reading Scholarship Program is available to students in grades 3 through 5 who scored below a 3 on the ELA assessment. And this program offers $500 to students that they can use to support their reading development. And finally, we have CAPE Academies, which is one of the career education options that we have available in Florida. CAPE Academies are research-based programs that integrate an academic curriculum with an industry-specific curriculum aligned with Florida's workforce needs. Our analysis only included CAPE academies, as we were not directed to look at the other career education options that we have available, such as career-themed courses. When you look at student enrollment in these programs over the past 5 years, you could see from this line graph that CAPE academies, magnet schools, and gifted programs had high participation rates. The Reading Scholarship, which you could see there at the bottom, had fewer participants, but it's a fairly new program, and it also provides supplemental education as opposed to being the main education program for students. I'll highlight CAPE academies with some of the information we included in our full report. Last school year, 12% of Florida public school students in middle and high school were enrolled in an academy. The industry-specific curriculum offered for these programs fall under a career cluster, which is a broad group of related occupations, such as information technology, architecture and construction, and health science. Students can earn an industry certifications or post-secondary credit when participating in CAPE academies. And when you look at the demographics provided here, you'll find that these percentages are pretty close to the statewide percentages for these categories, suggesting that student participation is representative of the Florida public school population. In this last section, I'll talk a little bit about the high school acceleration programs that we reviewed. We examined four choice options that allow students to earn post-secondary credit. Advanced placement allows students to take rigorous courses to earn credit upon and earn credit upon passage of an exam. Similarly, dual enrollment courses are offered to students to take college-level courses while still in high school to earn both high school credit and college credit. Both the ACE and IB programs offer an international curriculum with a series of accelerated courses. Students can earn college credit upon passage of exams for the courses that they take. And each of these choice options have incentives in place for schools, such as bonus funding within the FEFP and teacher bonuses. When we looked at the data for these acceleration programs, we found that student participation in each of these options has grown over the past 5 years. As you can see here, AP remains the most popular option, but dual enrollment and ACE participation have grown at higher rates. For example, ACE participation has nearly doubled over the past 5 years. Here, I'll highlight just one of these programs, dual enrollment, which has grown by 44% over the past 5 years. As you can see on the left part of this slide, there are eligibility requirements outlined in statute for this option. Students can take these courses at a post-secondary institution, their high school, or a local career education center. At the top right corner of this slide, I've included some demographic information for these students, which look pretty similar to the demographics of other high school acceleration programs. Another analysis we've provided in the report is by district participation, and we've done this in two ways. On the map on the left, we've included just a headcount of students. However, it's helpful to look at this in relation to the map on the right, where we've included participation as a percentage of high schoolers in the county. For example, if you look in the northern part of the state on that left-hand map, it appears as if there aren't very many students participating in dual enrollment. However, if you look at that map on the right, you could see that you actually have a sizable percentage of students who are taking dual enrollment courses in this part of the state. This last snapshot I'll provide is a comparison of dual enrollment and AP participation. When you look at these maps, you could see that participation of high school students in different acceleration programs may vary in the same county. And a good example of this is right here in Leon County. When you look at the dual enrollment participation rate, it shows a lower percentage on the scale we have here, with less than 10% of students participating in this option. However, when you compare that to AP participation, you'll see that Leon County students represent some of the highest participation rates in AP courses throughout the state, with over 30% of students taking advantage of this option. So it's helpful to look at high school acceleration programs as a whole when thinking about student participation by county. This concludes my presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Young. We appreciate that presentation. Members, do you have any questions for Ms. Young? Yes, Representative Rizzo, you were recognized.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much for that presentation. So I do have a series of questions, if time allows.
You're recognized for a series.
Thank you very much. On slide 13, for school year 1920, Can you give us sort of an indication of an increase in virtual attendance after, I guess my question is more directed to before the pandemic struck and schools were closed for a period of time to after?
Ms. Young, you're recognized to respond openly.
Okay, thank you. We did not look at the data beyond 2019-20, so we wouldn't have information on the students who are learning digitally this year during COVID. And the numbers that we have from last year were from Survey 2, so that was prior to when students, that fourth quarter where students were out when the pandemic hit. So we don't have that information, I'm sorry.
When might you have that information?
We can work with committee staff to provide you, see if we could provide you an answer to that question.
Please, thank you. And specifically, I'd like to know Florida virtual versus district virtual programs.
Okay.
And my next question, is there a choice program that has declined in participation over the period of time that you've presented today?
I do. One that comes to mind is looking at CAPE academies. We've seen a decline in that in the past couple of years, and that could just be because students are taking advantage of other career education options. That's just one that comes to mind, but I can look through and see if there are others and provide that to you later.
I did see on your on one of the slides that we did see a decline in CAPE Academy enrollment, but I just would like to see the others, that are not highlighted here, particularly on those graphs.
Sure.
Also, what can you describe a little bit? What is the testing incentive for on slides 20 and 21 mm-hmm. for the schools, in particular AP tests, ACE tests?
Mm-hmm. So schools get bonus FTE upon student passage of an exam. And then there are also bonus incentives for teachers for the students in their course, in their class who pass those exams. They get, I think, $50 per student who passes an exam up to $2,000.
And is that the same for the ACE or is that only AP?
I think that's ACE, IB, and AP.
And AP.
Mm-hmm. But there is also an FTE bonus available for dual enrollment, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. And the final question, Chair, thank you very much for your indulgence. IB programs, mm-hmm. it seems like it's reached a saturation, or it's at least there's no more of an incline, an increase in participation. Is there any reason for that? Is it simply a saturation within each district? Or have there been hurdles? Is it that districts are moving to more choice, other choice options?
That's a good question. Thank you for that. We were just directed to look at the enrollment numbers over this time period, so we can't talk about any reasoning for upward or downward trends. We do know for an IB program, you have to have that program established at a school, and we're not sure what the process involved there or if there are districts who are experiencing barriers with that or like you said, maybe trying to take advantage of other options that are available for high school acceleration. We just wouldn't know that from the data that we had available.
Okay, and is there an IB program at every one of the 67 LEAs?
No, there's not. And there is a map in your full report, and it shows, and I can direct you to the page. On page 45 of the full report, you can see that we have a map showing participating students, and the counties that are in gray show that there are zero IB students, so they presumably don't have an IB program.
I'm sorry, what page was that?
That's 45 in the full report.
45, okay. Mm-hmm. And then just to follow up, and that'll be my last question. What is there a virtual option for IB?
I do not know the answer to that question, but we can work with committee staff to provide you with one.
Thank you.
Not to my knowledge.
Thank you, Representative
much.
Rizzo. Members, our chair is back, so I'll gladly turn back over to Chair McClain.
Thank you, Vice Chair Schofer, taking over while I was gone. I appreciate it. And I believe Representative Valdez, you have a question. You're recognized.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And may I be recognized for a series?
Yes, ma'am. And Ms. Young?
Yes.
You don't have to go back through me. Y'all can go ahead and have a little exchange, okay?
Thank you.
If y'all get off topic, I'll jump in.
Thank you. Thank you,
All right.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you so very much for your insightful presentation this morning. And if we go to the data on the VPK, I believe it was early on, I believe page 7, in the light green areas where we've seen very little participation of VPK, does your department go in a little bit deeper to find out maybe what the reasons are? Is it because there aren't many programs available? Or what are some of the challenges that those particular counties have?
Thank you for the question. That's a good question. We were directed to just report on the information and we're show the data for by county participation in VPK, but it would require further analysis to see if there are any what the barriers may be for those lower percentages.
Is that something that you need to be directed to do? Is that something automatically that the department does, or is there someone else in the system that could answer that question a little bit more clearly as far as the data?
I would need to check to see if we would be directed to go further with our analysis, but perhaps the Office of Early Learning may have more information on that.
Thank you. The other one is on slide 5, mm-hmm. where we talk about the different educational settings. I am interested to see in the private school sector of the portion, if you have any information on income levels of all participants of this data?
No, I do not believe we have that information available. And when the private schools fill out the annual survey that they need to submit to the department every year, the demographic information is a voluntary part of that survey. So, you know, we don't have that. And I think it wouldn't be as complete as the public school information that you're seeing as well.
So in essence, are we able to determine out of the 352,000 students, back up, of the 2,821 students in private schools, whether they are participants of one of our scholarship programs?
Oh, yes, we do have information on the scholarship programs and other parts of the report that I didn't cover today. And so you could look in each of those profiles and they have, they'll show you numbers on participation, you know, at private schools or public schools when we have that available too.
Okay, thank you. And as it pertains, this question is gonna be based on other committee meetings that I've sat in, and we're talking about workforce and the importance of being able to educate our students and preparing them for life. As it pertains to the workforce development, I know that we have community partners and other agencies such as CareerSource that offers specific programs that are kind of sort of in direct competition with either the offerings of the adult technical programs of the public school system or even of our technical colleges and or junior colleges where their programs are a little bit watered down within the certification time so that they can get to work, but in actuality, it's just a shorter period of a training and yet they get to go into a job right away. So my concern is, and I don't know if any of your data shows this, whether or not the students that enroll in your traditional adult technical program, that let's say a welding program might take 18 months to get the full certification, versus if you need to be retooled and you wind up going to a service agency such as CareerSource, they'll give you a program that's 12 weeks. And you go to work. Yet these individuals over here that are taking the traditional route of going through the whole training wind up, I don't know, on the wayside. So does some of your data, and they're not providing, in my opinion, the adequate curriculum. So in your data, were you able to, is that part of the data, the comparisons of the different types of opportunities that are students and young adults and, well, just adults in period in general, and their outcomes? Have you been able, is that something that the data shows?
Right, so like you mentioned, the workforce world is really big and you have a lot of different providers who are giving different opportunities to for career readiness. We were only directed to look at CAPE academies, and even within that, we were just directed to look at the enrollment numbers and how that's looking, how it's trending and everything. So we don't have any outcome information available for even the one we were directed to look at, and then we didn't look at any of the other workforce programs available because we were only directed to look at CAPE academies. So we couldn't provide a comparison of that either.
Well, thank you very much. Again, your presentation was very insightful, and I appreciate it. Mr. Chair,
thank you.
You know, as we move forward with these conversations of workforce, I hope that we're able to look at and really compare the, try to compare the whole system. Because I see that there is different expectations, different settings, which is okay. I like the competition, so long as it's apples to apples, if you will, and they wind up having the same opportunity for these great jobs that are out there. So just trying to be a little bit more thoughtful for the greater good. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Rep. Valdez. I believe as we continue to work our way through our committee processes, I think you'll be pleased with kind of what we're trying to. Obviously, the speaker has melded employment and education together in his terms, and I think that we certainly recognize, you know, those issues. So I think we'll be doing that. I'd like to move on along. Vice Chair Schoaf, if you have a question.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Ms. Young, in slide 13, you noted that a large percentage of district virtual instruction is provided outside of the county of residence. Does the district where the student reside pay for that?
Thank you for that question.
You're recognized. I'm sorry. Yes.
Thank you. So Hendry County was the only one where we saw a large percent of students outside of the county taking a district virtual program. And that was the only anomaly that we could see in the data, and we can explain, you know, why they had such a high percentage, but we weren't asked to look at the funding implication of that set, that program delivery. So I don't have an answer to that question, unfortunately.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
You recognize?
So Ms. Young, and Hendry County residents, just to be clear, you're saying that they are paying for the instruction of students who do not live in Hendry County?
You're recognized.
Thank you. I'm not sure who's paying for it. We just know that they have this program and that there are students all over the state that are taking it, but it's offered by Hendry County.
Thank you.
Representative Woodson, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. May I be recognized for two questions, please?
Yes, ma'am. So here's the situation. We're trying to, we've got a little bit of time for each presentation and then questions. And I've got one, two, I've still got a couple more behind you, so if you would try to make it as concise as possible, yes.
I will do that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, you're recognized.
Thank you, Ms. Young, for such a detailed presentation. My first question has to do, Rep. Valdez kind of touched on the workforce. However, I'm going more on the student's outcome. Knowing that OPAGA is responsible for program analysis and government accountability, has there been any thought giving to see how the programs are faring, how the students are faring when it comes to outcome, in order to make sure that we are in light of the different standards that exist between the public schools as well as the other entities, which is private or vouchers? Have there been any thought giving to that, since you're only focusing on enrollment trends, student participation, demographics, and also choice options?
Right, that's a good question. And we, you know, we for this project, we do, in general, our office does program analyses, but we, for this project, we're only directed to provide the data of participating students in each program, so we don't have outcome information available for the CAPE academies. But if you'd like, we can maybe coordinate with committee staff to see if we could get you an answer on that, but we don't have that as a part of this report.
Representative Woodson, if I could jump in real quick. So one of the things we the OPAGA was tasked with a certain we gave them a certain task. That's the information they've brought to us today. Obviously, if there are other questions that you have that weren't part of this, then certainly you can work with committee staff, and we can certainly try to get answers. And Rep. Valdez, you had some questions about demographics and some of that, and certainly you know we can make sure we get all those questions answered for you. Okay.
That's thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. The second question has to do with VPK. On page 7, between the five years, between 2015 to 2020, the number started higher in 2015 as opposed to 2020. Has there been any thought giving as to whether we have less VPK children, less four-year-old in the state of Florida, or is that a program, is that an enrollment issue? Because you started at a higher number, and mm-hmm. the number is lower as we move along in 2020.
Right. So again, we weren't tasked with looking at the reasons behind any upward or downward trends. We can just kind of present that. If you're asking if there is a different trend when you look at that as a percentage statewide, that's a different that would be a different trend line there, and I don't know if it would compare, but we could see if we could put that together for you and get that to you later.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Harding, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Ms. Young, for that presentation. It was well done and a lot of good information. As we look for opportunities how to improve the career education and workforce education programs in our state, do you have any insight you could give us on a couple areas that maybe we could look to improve and be an asset on that front?
I'm not sure if I can answer that based on what we were directed to do here. Again, we weren't looking at any sort of outcomes or, you know, program availability of these career education options, and we were only tasked with looking at the one with the CAPE Academy, so I'm afraid I can't answer that adequately here.
We'll add that to our list of questions. Rep. Maney, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Young, I also thank you for an excellent presentation, and I may be outside what OPAGA was asked to do, but let me try it and see. Mm-hmm. On your chart dealing with Florida Virtual School, I'm from a district that has a large military population, therefore a large dependent population, and they go all over the country and all over the world. I know several of my constituents take part in Florida Virtual School outside the political confines of Florida and some outside the United States borders. How are they counted? Where do you know where those bodies fit in your chart as far as counties or otherwise?
If
you recognize,
if I'm understanding correctly, do you mean are these students that we have here students who are currently living in Florida as opposed
to
students?
No, they are not living in Florida, Mr. Chairman. They're living outside the mm-hmm. state and sometimes outside the country with their parents on military assignment. Do you know where they are counted, or are they just kind of an other category?
I don't think we have information on those students. This is just students who are in Florida.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Is there anyone else? Any other questions, members? Any questions? Any other questions? All right. Ms. Young, thank you for your presentation. And members, there were a lot of questions dealing with really what OPAGA was not tasked with. And certainly, you can work with committee staff if you have those questions. Get with Ms. Sanchez, and we'll be sure to get you some answers. But excellent questions. Thank you for the presentation. Thank you. Let me get on the script here. Sorry, I'm trying to figure out where I'm at. Oh, right there. Members, now we're going to move to a panel discussion. It will be Dr. Greg Adkins, Superintendent of Lee County Public Schools, Mr. Andrew Jenkins, who's Senior Director at Orange Technical College, and Ms. Kim Moore, Vice President for Workforce Innovation at Tallahassee Community College. Today's panelists will discuss the process used to advise students on college and career education options while enrolled in secondary education all the way through college. Members, we will allow all panelists to present first and then open the floor to questions from the members for a healthy discussion. First presentation will be by Superintendent Adkins. Thank you for joining us, and you are recognized to make your presentation.
Thank you. Good morning, and I do appreciate the opportunity to present our college and career continuum here in Lee County, and specifically focusing on the career and technical education aspect of it. I just have to say it's truly been a dream of mine as a superintendent, and also I share it with the board, to make sure that every single one of our students who graduate from the school district of Lee County has at least one industry certification and also has a really clear knowledge of career options and pathways available to them. So we're working toward that goal. So I'm trying to advance my slide here. There we go. We do strive to provide our students with options, opportunities, and outcomes. It starts as early as elementary school, and that continuum goes clear through high school. That's something that we didn't have here in Lee County before, but we do have it here in place now. So we have a very coordinated effort. Just want to talk about what options that we do have available to our students. First of all, at our career academies, we have over 80 career and technical education programs across our 15 high schools, our two charter schools. And these things include a whole variety of things such as HVAC, agriculture, aerospace, welding, cybersecurity, gaming and animation, medical, hospitality, and many, many more. At the middle school level, we have 10 career and tech ed courses and options for our middle school students. These things are in areas such as coding, agriculture, and Microsoft Office. And at the elementary level, we do have a career exploration program that we have in place, which I'll discuss a little bit more in detail in just a moment. So specifically looking at how do we share and advertise, communicate these opportunities to our students and also to our community at large. You know, one of our biggest things that we do is actually just the good old fashioned brochure, because it can provide a lot of detail to our constituents in terms of what are the pathways that are available to our kids. So every opportunity we get, every time we present, and of course at our schools, we do provide our students with this when we're doing advising, as well as our parents. We went digital this year because of the pandemic. That has in the past has been a printed version. I want to talk just for a moment about our career advisory boards. These are very, very important to us. We have just started bringing them on board at our high schools. We now have over 171 people participating. These are our business owners. These are our community members that represent all of our stakeholders across the school district of Lee County. They actually work directly with our high schools to advise them on our career academy programs, give them advice, what's working, what's not. They also serve as a really good resource for us in terms of how to make improvements for our students to make our programs better. And you can see a wide variety of other things that we do just to get the word out in terms of the opportunities that are out there specifically. Now, as I go through the different levels, I'll talk about how we advise students at each level. So let's start with elementary. What you see in front of you there is what we call the Excel bus. We took an old retired bus, and we repurposed it to this opportunity for kids to actually explore different career opportunities. This bus actually travels out to our 43 elementary schools, our three K-8 schools, so that students get a firsthand, hands-on virtual experience using kiosks. So we're able to reach over 7,000 students. That's all of our kids in grade five, in terms of what do we have available in the school district and what do we have available out there in terms of careers in Lee County. We do have some great sponsors for this, and we couldn't do it without our sponsors, the Lee Building Industry Association, Lee Health, our Lee County Sheriff's Office, My Shower Door, and Portfolio Dental. At the middle school level, as I mentioned earlier, we do have 10 CTE programs, but we also have My Career Shines Career Interest Aptitude Assessment. This is very important in our advising component. It gives us an idea in terms of what the student's interest may be in. So as we're working to address with our counselors to really work directly with our students on what CTE options do you have available to you now and also in high school, I think this helps us to actually direct some of those efforts. Another couple things that are very, very excited about, the Build My Future Lee County Construction Trades Expo. This is, again, the Building Industry Association has really helped us with this. This is where all of our, many of our students in high school and also in middle school have an opportunity to come out to the Lee Civic Center and work directly with trades professionals in the construction industry. This is a very exciting opportunity for kids to be able to see the trades in action, to have some hands-on experience, whether it's doing construction or masonry, or even we have high school students can even drive a concrete leveler. I mean, there's just a lot of, it's just a really engaging opportunity for our kids to get exposure to careers they may not have even thought about, and also to be able to talk directly to the people in those fields. Junior Achievement, this was actually, they looked at the success of the Lee County Expo and decided we could do something as well. So this year we're gonna have a virtual career day for all of our eighth grade students. It's sponsored by Junior Achievement. We're looking forward to that coming up in the very near future. Our high school opportunities, I already mentioned the 80 CTE programs. One question that does come up is, what if one of those programs is not available at the high school that I attend? So what we try to do is to replicate many of our programs in each of our three attendance zones, particularly our high cost programs like auto mechanics. And if a student, let's say for example, would normally be in attendance at Lee High Senior High School, but they want to go to the auto mechanics program at East Lee County, what they can do is they can apply for a waiver to get there. And we're very fortunate enough here in Lee County to be able to provide transportation for that to occur. So we are able to give our students different opportunities at our different district high schools across our district. In addition to that, we do have some fantastic internship opportunities. You see a student there in the slide at South High School. That's one right now where we have 8 internships, where these kids work directly in auto mechanics at the high school. They're learning the trade, and then they get sponsored by some of our local dealers in the area. So they may even get uniforms and equipment and things like that. I think that's just a real cool opportunity for our kids. We also have multiple business partners that help us in our support our student program, which we offer in the summer to our high school students and some of our middle school students. This is where our kids can learn soft skills in the morning, things such as application interview skills, finance, and then in the afternoon they can work with one of our business partners in a real job experience, get paid money to do that in many, many cases. So that's again an opportunity to work directly with professionals in the field and get a good idea in terms of how, you know, what career opportunities that they have available to them. We also have the Train to Gain program, which is a partnership with the city of Fort Myers. That's designed specifically for English language learners who have no post-secondary plans. There are multiple trades that they get exposure to, such as plumbing, painting, roofing, and things like that. Now, looking at outcomes, we really have made a goal to increase the number of CTE enrollments that we have in Lee County, and you can see that is steadily increasing every year. We also are working on our industry certifications. Right now we're at 45%, but as I said earlier, we're really looking for that to be 100% in the very near future. Now you do see a drop off there in the slide. That is because of course, the pandemic that we're in, and the opportunity for them to test, and that wasn't available this year, but we expect that to pick right back up next year. They also, in terms of some of the things that we see in our outcomes, I have to brag on Dunbar High School. We actually, you don't hear many very often about world champions, but we actually have had two world champions in the Microsoft competition that came right out of Dunbar High School, which is I still believe is the only Microsoft certified school in the world. But we had one back in 2014 in PowerPoint, and then most recently in 2018 in Excel. So excited about that. We're also seeing an increase in non-traditional students entering some of our career programs. Like in 2017, we had a young lady at Eastley County High School who also was dual enrolled in one of our technical colleges, and she earned her welding certification and then went on to graduate and getting a job in her field. And so we're seeing an increase in those types of things, which we're pretty excited about. In terms of overall what we're looking at for the class of 2020, 62% of them indicated that they had plans to go attend college. 11% technical college, enter going directly into the workforce, about 19%, 4% armed services, and 4% were undecided. Here's a neat opportunity that you can see that we offer at some of our schools. This one is at Bonita Springs High School. This is where you have career dual enrollment, where a student that might not normally be able to access a dual enrollment opportunity is able to access a career dual enrollment opportunity at that school. So last year we had 75 of our high school students at Bonita Springs High School that were enrolled at Embry-Riddle aeronautical courses, and they could take it right there at the high school. This year we have about 45. And this program is just kind of really, really neat. We just had two students that earned their drone certification, that FAA unmanned aircraft commercial drone license. They were able to get that. And we have another 27 students that are on track to earn that certification this upcoming semester. The principal told me, you know, recently we had a student who was participating in flight training that was actually able to do a flyover at a homecoming game. So that was pretty neat. And we also just recently had a student accepted at the prestigious University of North Dakota Aviation Program. We are also exploring other partnerships to expand these programs with Charlotte Technical College or here locally at Pagefield so that we can get some experience that are working in the airplane and power plant mechanic area. Finally, just to talk a little bit about, again, outcomes. We try to make a big deal about moving into the workforce for our students so they can get excited about it. So if you think about, you know, a lot of our athletic scholarships, we make a big deal about signing, you know, I'm going to go to FSU or University of Florida or some other big school. But this is where we actually have signing days here for our students that are going directly into the workforce. In a local, you know, with a local business, such as Bonita Bay, My Shower Door, Marriott, Cypress Cove Retirement, Sam Galloway, and just many, many others. So we're pretty excited about that. Also, we've had a goal to expand our technical colleges here in Lee County. So we're currently starting to renovate Fort Myers Technical College with the hope to expand that. We're expanding Cape Coral Technical College, and we're also looking to actually open a satellite office out in the eastern part of our county that will be an extension of Fort Myers Technical College. So to really meet the tremendous demand for the skilled trades in areas that you know, where we just always have full classes. We're also working with Lee Health, also a large employer, the first largest employer here in Lee County. We're second. But Lee Health, we're working with them to try to meet their need for CNAs. So we've got this great program called Earn to Learn, which actually recruits entry-level employees. And they'll get entry-level jobs with Lee Health. They also get their tuition paid for. And then we train them, we fast-track them to become CNAs here in our local area. Finally, I just have to say that we are very, very excited to have been awarded the Florida Pathways Career Opportunity Grant. This grant is going to allow us to really identify some gap areas that we have in IT here in the district and offer apprenticeships to these employees so they have an opportunity to level up their skills. So this, again, was something that the education commissioner and our governor just announced. So we are excited about that because we're able to meet a demand that we have here while also working with our employees so that they can gain access to a job opportunity they might not otherwise have. So I just want to close by saying this. Could not do this without our many, many, many business partners who have been absolutely amazing in providing us guidance, input, even financial support. So I really appreciate that. And I'm really excited that, you know, our governor and also our legislators have made career and tech education a focus. I think there's amazing opportunities for our kids, and I think it's the right thing to do for the state and the community. And with that, thank you, and I'll be happy to answer any questions when the time comes.
Thank you, Superintendent Atkins. And we hope you'll hang around for a few minutes. We're going to go ahead and move through our presentations, and then we'll allow questions from each of the panelists as we move forward. Thank you for your presentation. Now we'll move on to Mr. Jenkins. You are recognized to present, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. I do want to thank you for this opportunity to share a technical college perspective on preparing students for college and careers. I want to be mindful of my time, so I'm going to be reading most of my notes here. As a high school math instructor back in the late 80s, I attended an assembly where the motivational speaker proudly proclaimed to the senior class that if you don't make it to college, you won't have much of a career. That bothered me at the time because I had two older brothers, neither of whom had attended a four-year college, but possessed technical skills that allowed them to be in very lucrative career fields. Fortunately, that message is to our school community has experienced a metamorphosis, and people are beginning to understand that the primary goal of our secondary schools should be to ensure that all of our students are college and career ready. I am the senior director of Orange Technical College, Orlando campus. We work closely with our high school and our middle schools to educate and expose students to career and technical education and communicate the many career opportunities students can take advantage of by participating in CTE programs. We do not focus on a one shoe fits all. Our goal is and should be that every student has a promising and successful future. One way of doing this is making sure that our students are career ready. We offer secondary and post-secondary options for students. Students can take CTE courses on their high school campus, or they may be dual enrolled, attending classes on the Tech College campus. By participating in these programs, students earn industry certifications, explore career options, complete a career certificate program, or in many cases, receive college credit. Orange County Public Schools just released their 2019-20 annual report. Last year, 8,783 industry certifications were earned by secondary students. The number of certifications earned continues to increase each year. We currently have 1,094 high school dual enrolled students who attend classes on the Tech College campuses, and 2,441 students that are enrolled in a career certificate program on their high school campus. Now, that number is just students that are getting post-secondary credit, but the number of students that are actually receiving attending CTE classes is much higher than that. Enrollment in our CTE program has increased significantly as students are being made aware of the career opportunities that can be realized by participating in CTE programs. Some of those can be completed before students graduate. Two such programs are patient care assisting and practical nursing. These students decide to explore and participate in a licensure or certificate program in health occupation that allows them to go directly into the workforce after graduating from high school or continuing their education in a career pathway that leads to a career as an RN, nurse practitioner, or even a medical doctor. And again, this is a pilot program that we have at one of our high schools where, again, students in their high school can enter into our practical nursing program and upon completion from high school, they're ready to sit for the NCLEX exam, and you would have a high school student graduating, being able to get into a profession where they're going to be making quite a bit of money, and in many cases, more than maybe a beginning teacher would be making. Orange County Technical College has career specialists in each of our 20 high schools who work in collaboration with the high school staff to provide career counseling for students. These career specialists inform high school students of the myriad of CTE programs on the Tech College campuses, as well as those that are offered on the high school campus. They discuss career options for students and highlight various career pathways afforded students by participating in CTE. Our career specialists also participate in open houses and other high school activities, sharing information to parents and the community about career and technical education programs. I want to highlight a great partnership that we have with our local state college, Valencia College. It is called Tech Express. The mission of this collaborative partnership is to raise awareness of earned college credits available upon completion of an articulated technical certificate and provide on-site assistance to facilitate a smooth transition to the state college. That equates to free college while students are in high school. This collaborative partnership allows us to focus on what's best for the student. Valencia College and Orange Technical College are not in competition with each other, but are partnering together to create pathways for students who want to continue their education. Most of our technical programs have an articulation agreement where the student can receive an agreed upon number of credits upon completing their career certificate program that is then articulated to a program of study at Valencia College. As part of this partnership, Valencia provides a Tech Express advisor for each of our tech colleges in order to assist students in taking advantage of this opportunity and to receive college credit. The Tech Express advisor attends high school recruitment fairs in order to share this information with high school students and parents. They also participate in school open houses. Again, this is very important because these are students who are receiving college credit while in high school. Since the implementation of the Tech Express, the number of articulated credits to the state college has increased significantly. Each of our campuses also has a post-secondary specialist whose job is to recruit students who would like to participate in our dual enrollment programs on the Tech College campus. High school students are also provided field trip opportunities to the technical colleges, and they can visit at that time, visit the programs of interest. We also host recruitment fairs for our high school seniors. During these fairs, we highlight the programs offered at each of our four campuses, discuss financial aid, and the admissions process. I want to reiterate that there must be a focus on communicating the merits of career and technical education to students and their parents, starting at the middle school level, but especially in the high schools. Over and over again, data suggests that CTE students are more likely to graduate from high school than non-CTE students because they become engaged in their learning experiences and become highly motivated, involved in real-world learning. Also, CTE students tend to have higher grades in core subjects like reading and math and science. CTE classes are not just job training for high school students. They explore a wide variety of career fields that assist students in finding what they are most passionate about pursuing. High school students participating in CTE programs have the option of going straight into the workforce, having completed a program or received a certification, or continuing their education at the technical, state, or four-year college. Students who do not receive a high school diploma still have an opportunity to attend a technical college. Most of our programs do not require a high school diploma in order to enroll, but there are a few that do require a standard diploma or a GED, such as our practical nursing program. The Board of Nursing dictates those program requirements and not the tech colleges or the state. We also offer a GED program for those seeking to attain a state of Florida high school diploma. This is great for students who have struggled to attain the standard high school diploma. Additionally, we offer a program where GED students can enroll into a career certificate program are seeking to obtain their GED. And I think this was already mentioned, this is a state initiative referred to as IET, Integrated Education Training. The GED instructor works in collaboration with the CT instructor to assist students in completing not just their program of study, but also obtaining their GED. At Orange Technical College and other technical colleges around the state, our goal is to focus on a career pathway for all of our students. For a GED student, getting their diploma is only the start. Obtaining the career is the ultimate goal. I'd like to take a moment just to highlight a career pathway of one of our former GED students. And he said I could use his name. Joe Raymond came from Haiti and was encouraged to enroll in our GED program in order to receive a State of Florida high school diploma. It was difficult, but he finally passed the GED exam and received his diploma. Once he received his diploma, he then enrolled into Valencia College, Community College at the time, and received his AA degree. From there, he enrolled at the University of Central Florida, where he received two bachelor's and eventually a master's degree in educational leadership. He has taught middle school math and was a high school assistant principal for 2 years. Currently, Joe is one of my assistant directors at Orange Technical College, Orlando campus, supervising their admissions department and the adult education department, which includes the GED program. He credits his career path on the encouragement from his two GED instructors to do more than just get his GED. Incidentally, he is an assistant director at the same school where he received his GED. This is an example of the many opportunities our students have at the technical college. From the student who is struggling to complete high school to the top students in their prospective schools, career and technical education opens up numerous career opportunities. One of our former associate superintendents coined the phrase surf and turf to illustrate how the view of technical education is beginning to change. He stated that in the past years, colleges were considered the steak and career and technical education was considered the lobster. They were separate dishes. However, today is not an either or. Students can have both steak and lobster, or surf and turf, as he would call it. By preparing our students to be college and career ready, we indeed prepare them for a brighter future. As you can see, Orange Technical College puts a lot of resources in advising and exposing students to career options through career and technical education. I hope I was able to convey our perspective to be that participating in CTE courses or programs while in high school is extremely important in providing students with opportunities to explore a career theme of interest while learning a set of technical and employability skills designed to prepare them for careers in current and emerging professions. Thank you again for this opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Jenkins, for your presentation. We'll move on to Ms. Moore. Ms. Moore, you're recognized to make your presentation. Thank you for making the long trek over from TCC to downtown here. So.
Exactly, just a short run out there. Thank you, and so glad to be with each of you today, Chairman and fellow commissioners. I am Kim Moore, Vice President for Workforce Innovation at TCC, and just some insight regarding TCC. We serve over 11,000 students right now. We are one of the top 10 colleges in the nation with that Aspen designation. Moreover, we are a top feeder program for Florida State University as well as FAMU, and add to that, 33% of our students served are African Americans, with 50% of them receiving financial aid. So just insight there, and I will add to the conversation shared just by my colleague. I am also a product of Tallahassee Community College, where I earned my first degree. So it's certainly great to know that the empowerment that comes from, one, earning your degree and then adding to it. With that in mind, the areas that I oversee, just to add context to the conversation later and questions that you all might have, I oversee adult education, which includes ESOL, traditional career and technical education, so those career and technical programs you've talked about, reentry, which includes vocational work in 5 prisons across the state, and also a work release program, centers of excellence that range from transportation logistics to include manufacturing as well, apprenticeships, both pre and formal, and also our outlying service centers. And I would like to add the Performance Innovation Institute, which means that we also provide employer solutions across the state of Florida. So I get to enjoy the full breadth of everything that we've talked about of combining education and workforce development. So moving into the presentation, we have a, I call it the conversation map, the areas that I'll touch on briefly. They will include the process. What do we do in the way of advising for college and career pathways? The second will involve training options. How are they advertised? How do we get the word out? The third will be program availability. You know, does everybody know about it? Do you have access to it? And lastly, our post high school pathways. So we start with the end in mind, thinking that every student, whether they choose to take short-term training or complete a two-year degree or venture on to Florida State or FAMU, that ultimately they will end up either starting their own business or working with an employer. With that in mind, we focus when working with our students, as soon as they apply, within 24 to 48 hours, they are contacted by an admissions navigator. That admissions navigator works with them to, one, make sure that there are not any barriers to enrolling. They will also complete an assessment. That assessment is known as Super Strong, that looks at career and interest. We want to know that upfront. What are you driven by? How can we make sure that we invest in that? Upon enrolling into TCC, they are actually assigned a career and academic counselor or advisor, and that's more of a case management model. This isn't someone that's going to be one and done. It's relational. They're going to stay with them throughout their journey, which could include career and technical education or degree path. You see that before you, we have 8 academic communities that range from arts to business to education. Embedded in those pathways are opportunities, again, for short-term training, or it could lead to a degree. We don't make the differentiation. The thought is that there are many pathways to success. Let's jump on that roadmap to find what yours is for where you are right now. Again, I would point to, actually, I better probably go back on that one. I would share with you that the approach that we're taking is no wrong door. No wrong door. You can be served. It's a one-stop shop. It is lifelong learning. We understand that with the reimagined workforce and creating that talent pipeline, we're going to see you throughout your journey. So again, we want to make sure that we're serving you well up front. To paint that picture, if you were to visit our website, you would see that we really encourage our students to look at where you are right now. So do you have just the amount of time to complete a program in 90 days? And yes, there are 90-day programs, those that you can earn certifications and go directly into employment. Matter of fact, we have 70 of those. You might even decide that, you know what, I have 12 months or 6 months or 2 years. So you literally are guided by that at the onset by looking at our website. The next piece that I would draw your attention on, and this one has brought a lot of interest and a lot of replication throughout the state as well as throughout the nation, our approach is the culture of care, literally C-A-R-E, we care. And when we look and drill down into that four-pronged approach, care, the first piece of it is that realizing that we're serving the whole student, not just coming to TCC for education. It is indeed the whole student. So we start looking at those connections. For us, the connections have to come early. They come early in the way of middle school engagement, high school engagement. You're at the technical college, making sure that we have bridge programs that lend way or feed over to TCC. The other piece of it is looking at the academics piece. It is critical. We know that. So we start, again, with the end in mind by making sure that the student has academic maps, guiding them along the way. You know where you are. You know where the milestones are. And honestly, if there's, you know, an issue that arises, then they're early alert so that we can provide the support that they need in order to be successful. The next would be around resources, the R. We make sure and we understand that mental health and well-being is absolutely critical, not just during a pandemic, but just honestly in general. So we make sure that the wraparound services are available, which could include food pantry access, realizing that there are some food insecurities, as well as employment assistance. The majority of our students both work and go to school, so to leave that out of the equation would not be serving the whole student, so our focus is there. And then lastly, on engagement, we want to make sure that we are developing civic-minded individuals, so we make sure that they're They're engaged in volunteering in the community as well as participating in student clubs and organizations. That creates for us the CARE model, the culture of CARE, as a matter of fact. Some guiding principles that I would just share, and I certainly won't read all of those. You all have heard quite a bit, so I will give you high points on those. But the guiding principles is, of course, making sure that we have an individualized plan for each student served, that we have early connections that to college and career readiness, not one or the other, it's and, that we are focused on career and academic, realizing that there's a whole lot that makes up this whole student, and that we are prepared to embed resources along the way. I mentioned some of them, but here is where I'll add that we also have embedded tutors. Embedded tutors into those classes that we know that there's just a track record of that students will need additional support. The other piece of it, again, is around classroom engagement. So for TCC, when you look at the pathways, the great thing about and the message that we're sharing is that, again, it's a one-stop approach. So whether you're talking to me with workforce development or talking to my colleagues on the college and degree, the degree side of it, you're going to hear one message. You're going to hear that there's a pathway. There's a pathway that says that, you know what, if you're coming to TCC for professional development or CEUs, you can do that. If you need to get a quick certification and jump right into the workforce, you can do that in 90 days to 6 months, or you can decide that you want to stay for the 1 to 2 years and then progress on with the degrees. We even, again, have apprenticeships. I call it the menu of services, realizing, again, not transactional, relational, you'll see it over and over. One thing that I want to share with you, because I think it's important in how we look at education and workforce, I've shared with you my education background, but prior to joining TCC, I also served as the CEO for the Workforce Board, Economic and Workforce Development, for 8 years. So that whole combination of connecting the two leads me to the, I call it the initiative that we've laid out now. We were first in the state, and we were also recognized nationally for this, and that's our Be Essential campaign. We've talked about the need for career and technical education, but there is a need to be really, really responsive when something like this happens. We know that in our local community, Gadsden, Leon, Wakulla, that the largest impacted group for those impacted by COVID were those that were 16 to 24 year olds. Those are the people that are deciding whether they're going to pursue a two-year degree, whether to enroll at all, or just trying and jump into the workforce. We recognize that. We created a program that supports quickly going in and out. But we did not shortchange our efforts to make sure that we embedded those wraparound services. Through the Be Essential program, again, individuals who need it right now for TCC to step in, they are able to receive training that talks about 90 days. They receive tuition assistance. 90% of the folks that are served are receiving 100% tuition assistance and are going directly into employment. I think that's critical that we be able to, with workforce development, to be responsive and nimble. Together, we were able to create it here in our local area, a paired partnership with not only the nonprofits, but the Workforce Board, as well as our economic development organizations and chamber, what we called our community reemployment plan. Why is that important? We know that since the pandemic started, 40,000 individuals in our Tri-County area have made application for COVID-related employment. We would not be able to meet this need were it not for career and technical education and the view and stance that TCC as a two-year college has taken that each path can lead to a successful entry into the workforce. Let's do it together. And with that, I would conclude my presentation, Mr. Chair, and open the door for questions that you all might have.
Ms. Moore, thank you for your presentation this morning. Members, I'm going to open it up for questions now. Please try to remember, if you have a particular panelist that you're asking a question of, to identify them. If you have a question for the panelists, if there's a question that's asked and maybe one of you goes first or something, if the other one would like to add something, please try to give us a signal of some sort, and we'll try to make sure everyone gets an opportunity to answer questions that are, or to answer those questions and to give us information that's relevant to those questions. Members who questions? Representative Valdez, you get to lead off this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and oh my goodness, these presentations were phenomenal. Thank you to all the panelists. Superintendent Atkins, do you have any marketing budget dollars in your budget to promote your options and your opportunities that you offer?
Mr. Act, you're recognized. I'm sorry.
All righty, thank you. Yes, we do have some dollars available. If you don't mind, I'll recognize Rita Davis, who's our director in this field, and she can speak more specifically to the question.
Thank you.
You're recognized, Ms. Davis.
Thank you. So we use the power of social media marketing. We have accounts approved by the district, so we use that in mass to get our word out, also to connect with our students. And this year, we're starting something new funded by grant dollars called Ace Your Week podcast, and that we will use that as a tool for communicating with families and businesses as well.
Thank you very much. Mr. Superintendent Atkins, in reference to you mentioned your ELL population. Do you have any bilingual guidance counselors to assist the ELL population in your district with understanding what resources are available? Sometimes the attainment of or not being able to see themselves in college is because they do not know how to navigate. So automatically, we just think, you got to go here and get a career path rather than exploring with the child and their family the whole gamut of applying for the FAFSA and these opportunities like, for instance, TCC has. How do you assist the ELL population?
Well, and I will tell you that has certainly been a challenge here in Lee County. We are I believe still the fastest growing ELL population in the state of Florida for, I think this is our sixth year in a row. And we do have a gap between the diversity that we see in our students and what we see in our workforce. And also what we see really as you get older in Lee County, we get less diverse in Lee County. We do have bilingual staff and resources available. I am gonna ask Lori Brooks to come up. She's over our counseling, and she'll be happy to answer that more specifically for you.
Thank you, sir.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
As Dr. Atkins stated, we do have bilingual school counselors and staff members available. We also have, through our graduation coordinator, a district-wide graduation task force related to the needs of our ELL students. And in addition, we provide a lot of individual student planning along with our classroom and parent presentations that are targeted to the needs of all students with a specific lens to the post-secondary planning of our students that may be first-generation college students and also our ELL students that do experience significant barriers, or they may be fearful to identify some of the barriers that they're trying to work through. So we work diligently on an individual basis and through our presentations and our task force efforts to really work with students in different groups, specific in this case to ELL students, and the barriers that they may either perceive or experience in reality.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, I have one last question.
You're recognized.
Thank you, sir. And Ms. Moore, thank you so much for your presentation. It was very enlightening, and congratulations on the Be Essential campaign. That's phenomenal. Can you talk to me a little bit about your bridge programs and how many bridge programs you have? And specifically, if you have one for like the LPN to the RN track, and how long does that program take? And what are some of the barriers and what are some of the things that we can do legislatively to help promote these bridge programs?
Absolutely. So our nursing program is certainly, that's where we're seeing the greatest need, and we all understand why. So yes, we actually have bridge programs with our technical schools that are in the area already. So it's Lively Technical College as well as Gadsden Technical Institute. So those are in place. It's three semesters in length, and we have the first group that will be graduating from that this year.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Representative Rizzo, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I have two questions, one for Dr. Atkins and one for Ms. Moore. Dr. Atkins, congratulations, first of all, on what seems to be an excellent and thriving program and growing.
Thank you.
My question sort of dovetails into Representative Valdez's question. Do you have, can you actually quantify for us the cost of your college and career continuum program? And specifically, if you could kind of tell us what your investment is versus in kind with partners that you may have, and if you could kind of give us a per pupil investment in that.
That's information I'm going to have to get to you. I don't have that readily available to provide today. I will ask, again, Ms. Davis to come and give you a little bit more specific information, and then we can follow up if that's okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our primary funding source for our career and tech ed programs from grade 5 through grade 12 is the Perkins grant. We absolutely could not provide the opportunity for our student without that funding. What we've done over the last 6 years is to make sure that we look to demand occupation lists. We work with CareerSource of Southwest Florida to identify which jobs are in demand in our region. And so we do not implement a new program at the high school level if there isn't a demand in the workforce. And then we try to tie a industry certification on the CAPE funding list to that program. So we can initially support the program with Perkins dollars, and then we ask the school to sustain the program with CAPE funds that come back through industry certifications earned. Now, what that means is per student funding, we look at enrollment, and also we have tiered level of approach, how much support our schools, our high schools need overall. So we do a per student formula to make sure that we are equitably distributing Perkins dollars across our 15 high schools and two of our charter high schools. I don't have the exact per student funding for that. But I'd also like to speak to the in-kind donations by our business and community partners, such as Lee BIA, to put on Build My Future Lee County the first year was well over $15,000, and they actually paid for school bus transportation for our middle and high school students to get there. That is something we would not have been able to fund on our own. As for the Excel bus, we got the bus as a donation from our transportation department. So we could not exist in the depth and breadth in which we exist and offer for CTE without the Perkins grant, without CAPE funds, and without these donations from our community and business partners.
Great. Thank you very much. And Chair, if I may, I have two brief questions for Ms. Moore.
You recognize.
Thank you so much. Ms. Moore, thank you very much for that presentation. I can tell you, serving with on this committee and in my freshman class with a graduate of Tallahassee Community College who is very proud, Vice Chair.
I love it.
Vice Chair Schoaf is very proud of his roots, and I can tell you that he speaks the world of Tallahassee Community College, and I know you've got a great reputation, so you've got a great job. I can commend you.
Thank you very much.
I have two questions. One, have you seen a decrease in your traditional programs with your increase in your CTE programs?
We have seen that there is greater interest in how can I complete and earn something fairly quickly while explaining to them, again, that it's lifelong. But yes, we've seen greater interest in how can I get in and out, be a part of that workforce. And we always talk to them about a career path. So that's why it's important for educational institutions to think about stackable credentials. So even if they get the 90-day, this is how you come back and add to it. Yes, but yes, you're correct.
So overall, have you seen an increase in your student population?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I'll give you a prime example, and luckily the legislature was a part of this. They helped us out nearly 3 years ago by providing seed funding for our commercial vehicle driving program. Everyone knew that this was an in-demand program. We got the initial seed money. I am offering that program night, day, weekends, and in another county. And so, yeah, that's just one example of the just waiting list to get into those programs like that are short and earn a certification.
Wonderful. And my last question, do you have any sort of longitudinal data as to the efficacy or the your return on investment for these 70 programs?
So what I'd share with you, because I like looking at that data as well, so working with our institutional effectiveness office, I asked for our students, when we look at, are they in employment, are they returning back to and gaining other education, that 95% is what she shared with me today, that when we look at, they're either in the workforce or they're coming back, once they've got it, to get something else. And that's a great statement for us.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
You're welcome. Are there any other questions? Any other questions? Doesn't look like it. Panelists, thank you so much for your presentations today. They were all very informative, and we appreciate all of you being here. Keep up the good work out there, and we'll take this information and do something good with it up here in Tallahassee. All right, thank you. Members, with any, is there anything else that anyone else wants to bring up? It was a lot of good questions today. I think there was a lot of information that we can all digest. Obviously, if you have questions about some of the details of some of the presentations, you can get with Ms. Sanchez, and she'll be glad to help you out with that. If there's no other further business before the committee, Representative Valdez moves we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.